Welcome to episode 22 of Girls on Pop. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-host.
I'm Ashley Lynch.
We have a special show for you. We cooked up something extra special.
A spooky show.
A very spooky. Well, yeah, okay. I could go with spooky. I'm like, is there spooky stuff on my list? I'm like, I don't know. But we thought it would be fun to, you know, we both like horror movies. And we thought it would be fun to kind of do a horror-themed show for you leading up to Halloween. So, you know, if you're looking for stuff to watch, we got your back. We got
your back. Exactly. It's the season for it. It's the time to, like, bring out all of the good horror hits. And there's a lot of good horror movies out right now. And I thought it'd be neat. Let's dive in and just watch a whole bunch of new stuff that's come out. Or new to us, and see, like, you know, what's good horror out there for people.
I agree. I mean, for me, it's always a good time for a horror movie, but I totally feel you. A lot of people will only watch horror movies around Halloween, yeah. Which I think is weird.
I watch horror, like, all throughout the year. Ditto. But definitely in October, there's, you know, something about the month. I get into the mood, and it's like my horror consumption, like, you know, probably doubles a bit. And I start to watch more horror than normal.
Yeah, and I think, well, it also helps that a lot, like you say, there are a lot more like horror themed new releases around that time during mm-hmm. the time of the month as well. So it leads to, you know, just naturally watching more horror movies. So should we maybe start with probably the one that just came out that is the big buzz, which is
Halloween. I mean, speaking of Halloween themed movies that released around Halloween, should we talk about Halloween Kills? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, because I did manage to watch this one too. And I watch the Halloween movies almost out of like this necessity. Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily a fan, and half the time I don't really know what the hell is going on. It's just, to me, it's just a movie with a lot of killing. Like the theme, mm-hmm. like the whole history of it, I just could care less, to be honest. So I am not the best person to like dive into a Halloween movie, but I have thoughts, and I know you are more versed in this than I am, and I'm curious about your thoughts. Can you kick us off?
Sure. I'm probably a little more versed. I watched all of the Halloween movies recently, including the two Rob Zombie movies, which I'd never seen before.
I actually like the Rob Zombie Halloween one. The first one I thought was really good.
Not a fan. Like it.
There is a podcast on the internet somewhere where Andrew and I, when we used to do, oh God, I can't even remember the name of the podcast. It's been like a good 10 years. We did do a comparison of the two Halloween movies. And so there is proof on the internet that I am a big fan of that movie.
If you can find it. I believe it. And it has its defenders, as evidenced to me by Twitter, because I have a lot of people come out of the work and go, but it's pretty good. So it wasn't my thing. If it was your thing, that's awesome. Wasn't mine. Anyways, but we're going to talk about the new Halloween. So Halloween Kills is the sequel to the 2018 Halloween of the same title of the original 1978 John Carpenter classic Halloween. And the intention was that the 2018 movie would ignore all of the sequels, everything that gone. So you have the first movie, then the 2018 movie, and then this new one, Halloween Kills, is a direct, like, minutes after continuation from the 2018 movie. So there's not a lot of canon that you really need to get straight. At this point, you're really looking at two movies that this is a follow-up to. But this movie is, whatever you think Halloween Kills is, it is not that movie. This was one of the most unexpected slasher movies I've ever seen in my entire life. I was not anticipating that it was going to be what it was going to be. And I'm trying to talk in like vague generalities because I don't want to be too spoilerish, but it's, I've likened it to being the Matrix Reloaded of Halloween sequels, in that I think some people are going to bounce off it hard due to their expectations. They're going to not really dig it that much. And in about 10 years, a lot of people are going to come around on and say, you know what? Halloween Kills is good, actually.
I could go with that.
Where did you
Well, then this is the thing. So for me, as like a horror movie, I think it's fine. I actually thought it was great. It's, you know, it's really brutal. It has some super innovative kills. Like half the time I was like, wow, I've never seen that before. At least they're trying new stuff. And it just, it felt kind of fresh. And I thought it was kind of like in your face that it stars Jamie Lee Curtis, but she's like in a bed for most of the time and she is still not the central character, which I thought was kind of a nice dupe. Like generally, I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was like really well made and I thought it was a lot of fun. But, you know, where it fits within canon, I have no idea. To me, yeah, it's just a really good horror movie.
I mean, well, this is, it's very much a middle chapter film. So this whole thing is going to be concluded with Halloween Ends, where they're creating their own little basically trilogy that follows Carpenter's original film. And so, and it feels like a middle chapter film to a certain degree, because like that nothing ending, is nothing's resolved.
No, in and this that film. Ending is something else.
If anything, things are opened up.
Yeah.
But it's, it flips the formula of not just a Halloween movie, but a slasher movie kind of on its head. And inverts everything. Like a lot of the old sequels for Halloween would get stuck in this form of like they had to create some obsession for Michael Myers to justify why he is the way he is. Why is he constantly chasing after Jamie Lee Curtis or something like that? And they create like familial relationships or, you know, or druid cults or whatever else to kind of justify why is he this obsessive killing machine. And what Halloween Kills posits is actually the exact opposite. It's that it is the town of Haddonfield that can't let go of Michael because of their fear. They are the ones obsessed with him. And to Michael, Jamie Lee Curtis is just Tuesday. And all... The town is obsessed with pursuing and hunting down and stopping evil when all evil wants to do is stand in front of a window and look at itself. And it's really interesting for that. It is a take that I've never seen in a movie. It is a bit of a gut punch of a movie. And I found it really interesting. This is a slasher movie that has some real things on its mind. It's not just about delivering you a bunch of, you know, here's setting up the bowling pins so we can knock all of them except the last one down. It's not that type of movie. It has more interesting things to say. And it might be a little clunky in places, but I appreciated the swing. I appreciated that it was trying something new. Yeah, especially in something as tired as the slasher genre.
Yeah, no, and I think it's interesting that you have that reading into it, because I certainly didn't read anything more to it than just a slasher movie. But now that you're talking about it, that ending is makes way more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of scenes there where, I like I say, it plays really well. If you don't read any more into it, it just plays really well as a horror movie. So the fact that there's a lot more going on in the background as well is just a nice added bonus to me.
And it's also wild to see Anthony Michael Hall in a movie, which made me feel really old because I think we're probably pretty close to the same age. And I'm like, yes. Oh, shit, that's Anthony Michael Hall now?
Yes, we were watching the credits right here, and I'm like, oh, he's in this. And when it came up, I'm like, oh my God, I feel old.
I still remember him as Babyface Boy in like Breakfast Club.
Right? Right? Oh man. So I guess it's safe to say we both enjoyed Halloween Kills.
Yeah, I dug it, and I watched it with a group of people, and we were pretty split down the middle 50-50. Some people really didn't like it, and other people are like, no, I think this movie is good. It has interesting things to say. So it's good. There's going to be some really interesting conversations over the next couple weeks about this movie.
I agree. There's lots to dig into for sure. But yeah, as far as we're concerned, it's recommended. Good one to watch for Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Night House. Tell me about The Night House.
Yes. So I've been looking forward to this movie for a while. Where to start on The Night House? So the basic premise is Rebecca Hall is a woman who, as soon as the movie starts, we learned her husband has committed suicide. And she is living alone in this big house that he constructed out in, you know, some nice rural area on the bordering a lake. And she starts to uncover things in the wake of her dead husband that he was into that suggests that there's something more sinister going on top of that she starts to believe that his ghost is still hanging around the house. And it starts to get really twisted in ways that become very difficult to explain, but to the point where she finds a second house that he built across the side of the lake that is actually a complete mirror image of the house that they currently live in. And that there were all these women that he was bringing there and possibly murdering. And it opens up this huge mystery that is a lot about basically the people in our lives. Who are they really? Do we even know them? But also dealing with the grief of it. And it's a really cool and original and fun little horror movie. Rebecca Hall gives an amazing, amazing performance in this film. And it had moments where I was genuinely scared in it too, which is something of a rarity for any horror movie. I dug the hell out of this film.
This is awesome. Like I looked it up because I'm like, how have I not heard of this? So this is on, it looks like it's on Apple TV Plus, right?
I got it over iTunes. I know it just came out on VOD.
Okay, so that's what it is.
Why yeah, so it did the festival circuit, and okay. Then it had a small theatrical run, and now it's out on VOD.
So because David Bruckner has made a couple of movies that I really, really like. Like, yes. I really liked The Ritual, and I really liked Southbound. This is definitely going up high on the list, for sure.
And so here's a little bit of history to get a little bit more interested in this. So the guys who wrote this movie, they are also the director, David Bruckner, they are going to be doing the new Hellraiser movie at Hulu that Clive Barker is producing. And if you want to get a little bit of insight into what these guys have in store for a Hellraiser movie, this is going to give you that glimpse. And to make that connection even more, the writers, long ago, when Dimension had the rights to Hellraiser, they were developing a Hellraiser movie for Dimension that they ultimately did not end up making. But it was very much going to be this story. And so they took a lot of their development for Hellraiser and for their Hellraiser movie they didn't get to make and put it into The Night House. And you can see that. You can see that kind of influence in this story. So I think if you want to get excited about what a new Hellraiser from people who actually want to make a Hellraiser movie looks like, then this one is a nice primer on top of it being a really good horror movie.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, yeah. That's definitely happening before
this Halloween. Might actually be my favorite movie of the year when it comes down to it.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Okay, high on my list of things to watch. Might happen next. The Queen of Black Magic.
Yes. So this was a movie that was recommended to me by a friend. I hadn't really heard of it before. And they have been getting into a bunch of Indonesian horror, which I haven't really dug into. And apparently Indonesian horror is having a little bit of a thing right now. They're having a moment. So apparently it's a good time to check out some horror from Indonesia. This one's on Shudder. And it's actually a remake of a 1970s movie.
Okay.
But this is a nice, mean little film. It's basically about these three guys who sort of drag their family out to this rural orphanage that they all grew up in, because the guy who ran the orphanage is he died, and they credit this guy with sort of saving their lives and, you know, giving them a chance. And so they're coming to pay their respects to this guy, and they bring their families with them. And the ghost stuff starts happening. I don't know how to put it other than ghost stuff starts happening. And, you know, it starts to get really kind of brutal and really intense pretty quickly. And I would put this in the same category as Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead movie. It's maybe not as brutal or as gory as that movie, because that movie goes really far. It can be very hard to watch, but it definitely lives in the same territory where, like, people are cutting into themselves. If you're afraid of insects, this movie might be a hard watch for you. So it definitely very intense, and it ends up being a really good movie. I was super impressed by it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I don't think I've seen a lot of Indonesian horror. I've seen a few, but not a whole lot. So I might have to add this into the watch list.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be checking out a few more that I've had recommended to me, because it looks like the movement that they're having right now in Indonesia is pretty interesting.
Nice. We'll come back to the TV, because you've watched some horror-themed TV, but I've got a few movies to push out here. So VHS 94, which is now streaming on Shudder. Like any anthology movie, it has, for me, they always have kind of mixed results. And this one is in the same boat. Like, some of it is really good and some of it is not so great. By far my favorite of the entries is The Empty Wake from Simon Barrett, who's actually been involved with the VHS franchise for a while. Mm-hmm. It's just a really great like ghost story that then turns kind of ugly, but it has some very amusing moments as well. It has a bit of a dark comedic streak underneath, which I really enjoyed. And then Holy Hell, which is just insane, from Jennifer Reeder, who did Knives and Skin, which is also this very sort of esoteric, very feminine horror movie from, I think, last year. It made the festival rounds, and Holy Hell kind of fits into that as well. It's a very good little movie. I really like the end cap storyline that they've got going, but overall, I think for me, this was more miss than hit. but it varies, I guess, depending on what you're into. You might enjoy it more than I did. I thought it was okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much been my take on all the VHS movies up to this point. You know, it's like some good stuff, some bad stuff. They're fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. That's exactly it. It's just kind of like, I probably wouldn't go out of my way to recommend it, but it's also not like the worst thing I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Simon Barrett, he has another movie on Shudder, which I also watched, called Seance. And this one caught my attention, one, because I like him, and it stars Suki Waterhouse. And it's a almost kind of like a teen drama horror movie. Suki Waterhouse plays this teenager who gets a coveted space at a very prestigious girls' private school, because one of the girls, she basically took the spot of the girl that killed herself. She jumped out the window. And then there's other stuff going on. Maybe the place is haunted. Maybe there's more happening. It's a fairly standard, like ghost / teen horror drama, until it's not. It does take a bit of a wild swing sort of halfway through, and I think it delivers. I really enjoyed the ending. So for me, I would say it's a hit. Seance is worth watching.
Okay.
Werewolves Within. I was very adverse to this movie when it came out earlier this year. I had seen a lot of marketing for it, and I'm like, I am not into a horror comedy. It's just not really my thing. So for whatever reason, I was like, no, hackles up. I don't want to watch this. And I missed all of the screenings. They sent me a bunch of screeners. I'm like, no. Don't want to watch it. And I totally skipped it. And of course,
I talked about this movie like a few episodes ago.
Yes, right? So it's on Netflix now. And I'm like, well, it's Halloween themed. I'm like, well, maybe I'll watch this. And okay, I fully admit, I actually really enjoyed it.
It's Clue, isn't it? It is. It's a Clue type movie.
It totally is. The characters are really likable, and even adorable, and I didn't see the ending coming, and it was just kind of a lot of fun. It was way funnier than I thought it would be. It did kind of meet my comedic sensibility, which most movies don't. So, Color Me Surprised.
That one is a delight. I was not expecting to enjoy that movie as much as I did either.
No, neither did I, and I really liked it. So, hey, there's that. Host, which is also on Shudder. This is Rob Savage's movie. It's super, I don't even know if you can call this a movie. It's like a mid-length movie. It's like 60 minutes, if that. I don't think it even quite hits 60 minutes. With credits, it might be like 62 minutes. So the only reason I watched this is because I saw his new movie, Dash Cam, at TIFF, and which it also played the Vancouver International Film Festival. And Dash Cam is fucking insane. It is the craziest movie I've seen all year. Take that for what it is. And I'm like, everybody was saying, well, you know, he managed to do something really interesting with Host. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll watch Host. And it's basically the story unfolds over this group of people decides to have like I guess like a seance with like a reader over Zoom, and then shit starts to go sideways. It's not really innovative, but it is interesting for a movie that takes place entirely over a Zoom call. And I did enjoy it. I thought it was pretty good.
I haven't seen this movie, but I remember this one got a lot of buzz for basically being one of the first movies out of the gate once we were into the pandemic that was like, hey, we're going to shoot something in the pandemic. How do we do that? And how do we make a movie? We're going to make a movie over Zoom. And that's what they did. And it came out on Shudder. And, you know, it got a lot of attention for being that.
I think
at the time people were just happy. It's like, hey,
new content. Movies
can still happen.
Yeah, and I think it's worth watching for more than just being the first pandemic movie. I think it does manage to be really interesting, and it is a solid little thriller. Like, it actually has some good, I don't want to call them jump scares, but it does have a few moments that are like shocking. Like, how the hell did they do that? So it is, I think it's worth watching. And it's a very short time commitment. So it's worth it if you're even just curious about it. I really did go through my Shudder watch list. Another one from Shudder. Mosquito State. So this comes from Philippe Jan Rimza. It stars Bo Knapp and Charlotte Vega. And Bo Knapp plays this very insular... like stock market guy. He builds programs to predict futures, I guess. And he doesn't get out of the house much. He doesn't go out much. So the first time we see him, he's at a party, at a birthday party for his boss, and he meets a woman, and, you know, traction, stuff happens, sort of. But you can tell right off the bat that he's kind of a little bit off. The movie caught me like right off the bat because it just looks amazing. The cinematography and the set design on this thing are like superb. And then the movie has this almost kind of like The Fly element to it. Like, he gets bitten by a mosquito and then shit starts to go sideways. It's really weird. It's very uncomfortable. Like, really uncomfortable in places. It just goes in directions you don't expect. There's some, like, the opening sequence kind of gives you a feel for, like, the weirdness of this movie. I'm not really sure how to classify it, but it made me severely uncomfortable to watch. And it looks amazing. And Bo Knapp is really good. He plays this amazing, like, dude that's getting crazier by the minute. He's not losing his mind. He's just getting nuts. He starts crazy and he gets crazier. It's just crazy. It's the strangest little movie. Strangest little movie. So I can't say I recommend it to everybody because it's going to rub people the wrong way. But if you're into something that's a little more art house and you're willing to take a bit of a chance, this thing, it really, like, it impressed me a lot. So I'm in the boat for this Rimza guy. He's a great director, but it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. Like, it's just such a beautiful movie to watch. It's been a while since I've been impressed by something, especially when you're watching it at home. So I was really taken by the design of this movie. It's just awesome.
I will put that on my list.
Way backing things up a little bit, way more lowbrow, Superhost, which is also on Shudder. Hold on.
I just want to point out you watched Host and Superhost.
Yes, I know. I actually didn't put those two together. But yes, I did watch Superhost as well. I actually think Superhost is a better movie overall. I pressed play on this one because I love myself Sarah Canning. Sarah Canning for all the things. I love her to death. And so I saw her name in a movie. I'm like, what? Bring this on. So she and Osric Chow, who is on a lot of TV shows that are shot locally. I'm not quite sure if he's Canadian, but he shows up in a lot of stuff. So they play this YouTube couple. They're influencers who have a series on their YouTube channel called Superhost, where they basically visit rental properties, and they do reviews, honest reviews, they call them. And of course, they show up at this property and things start to go wrong almost right away. And it just goes from crazy to crazier. And it's fun. It's just a lot of fun. Canning and Osric have really great chemistry. There's some like internal tension between the two of them. It gets really messy and violent towards the middle. It's just like a really fun little horror flick that also has a streak of social commentary, which wasn't really expected, but I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It's just fun.
Very cool.
I rewatched Little Joe, which was, I think, if not my favorite, one of my favorite movies of the year, like 2 years ago. It's from 2019. This is Jessica Hauser's movie with Ben Whishaw and Emily Beecham. Happy to report, this movie is still fucking amazing. So have you seen this?
I have not. I'm not even sure I've heard of this before.
So I looked before we started because I was hoping that maybe it was on streaming somewhere, and it's not. It's just a VOD release. But Emily Beecham plays this scientist who is experimenting with plants. And so they develop this plant that's supposed to make you happy. By having it in the house, but it has like human characteristics. So you're supposed to have to talk to it and, you know, nurture it like a child. And then of course shit starts to go wrong because the plant is evil. It sounds ridiculous. I know it sounds ridiculous. It is the most glorious little horror movie. If you haven't seen it, so worth tracking down. Beecham is amazing. Ben Whishaw is amazing. The fact that this movie scares the shit out of you with a plant is amazing. It's top shelf.
Adding it to the list.
And then finally, I rewatched American Psycho because it's been too long. And I thought, why the hell not? It's on Netflix. And every time I watch that movie, I am reminded of how, one, batshit crazy it is. And two, how creepy it is in ways that become more succinct every year. It seems like every year we get closer to that 80s craziness that was. I don't know. There's just something about this movie that plays so well. And every time I watch it, I'm like reminded of how just ugly it is. Like, not like the movie looks amazing. It's just, it's just such a brutal little movie.
The ability for it to basically continue to be so kind of grisly,
yeah,
while Christian Bale goes through it with a smile on his face is endlessly off-putting.
It totally is.
It still very much works and is unsettling.
Oh, it totally is. And I mean, I had actually, it's been a while since I've seen it clearly because I had actually forgotten how crazy that movie gets in like the final act. Because I mean, the whole thing is kind of insanity, but just like at some point you start to question, did he actually do this stuff or is he just thinking it in his mind? Like, is he insane? And I'd forgotten that until I watched it again and I thought, wow, this movie, it just plays so well. The layers are still all there. The performances are still amazing. And this cast, like it's the who's who. It's the who's who. Everybody is in this. I've forgotten that.
There's so many actors like before they became big.
Were in this movie. like Reese Witherspoon has this little role as the obsessive girlfriend, which like just every time she calls, I'm like, oh my God, it's little Reese.
And then it constantly kind of gets rewatched, so people probably remember, but the guy that he kills with an axe is Jared Leto.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, before
is that revenge? Became
this like crazy cult leader.
Yeah. So it is on Netflix. If for whatever reason you've missed it or you've never seen it, I can't recommend it highly enough. This movie still plays amazingly well. But yeah, it's uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And the music is chef's kiss. Chef's kiss.
Give me Genesis. How do you feel about Huey Lewis in the news?
Yeah, give me Huey Lewis and Genesis in a horror movie anytime. Or Phil Collins. I think it's just Phil Collins. But yeah, anytime I'm in. So yeah, very, very good. And that's my recent watching. I was telling you I watched a bunch of other stuff that is not worth mentioning. It was mostly just the good stuff this time. But you've watched some TV as well, and I'm kind of disappointed because Midnight Mass is so high on my watch list, and I'm like, I don't have time, and I kind of feel like I need to sit down and watch the whole thing over like 2 or 3 days, if not one day. So I'm waiting until I have the time. So tell me about Black Mass. Is it as amazing as anybody says it is?
Yeah, so Midnight Mass is this new series from Mike Flanagan, who apparently this one was his baby, but is basically about this really small fishing town of like a few hundred people on an island, and the town's slowly dying, and the local priest has basically fallen ill, and this is before the story even begins, and because he's this old man who's been there forever, and this new young priest shows up and is like, oh, don't worry, he's on the mainland, he's, you know, resting up, and he'll be okay, but he's getting medical attention, don't worry, and I'm here to fill in the meantime. And then weird shit starts to happen. This show is Stephen King with the serial numbers filed off. This could not be closer. It feels like it's Needful Things crossed with Salem's Lot, crossed with God, I don't even know what else, but it's just like, it's Mike Flanagan at this point is very versed in making a Stephen King story because he did Gerald's Game, and then he did Dr. Sleep. So he knows very well how to make a Stephen King story, and apparently he knows very well how to make a Stephen King story without Stephen King, because that's what he did here. Is I'm looking for the Stephen King novel that's based off of, but it doesn't exist because it's the original Mike Flanagan story. So that's how good he is at making those types of stories. And this is a really interesting little horror series that I really dug and had some surprises for me. I think my only complaint, if I have a complaint, is I think it doesn't need to be as long as it is. Mm-hmm. There's some episodes where it's like, you know what? If you cut out 10 minutes of that person monologuing where I didn't really get too much out of it, this would have been a nice little breezy watch. Instead, the show has some heavy stuff on its mind. It's dealing with the place of religion, society, and faith, and the afterlife, and the importance of believing in something beyond yourself, and also the importance of not believing in anything religious. It is grappling with a lot of big ideas around faith. And it ends up being a really interesting horror movie, or horror series rather, where everything builds to a point and just explodes. And I really dug it by the end. I just wish it was maybe a little less sermony. I got three episodes into the series, and I said, you know what? I'm not sure that I'm Catholic enough for this show. And by enough, I mean like at all. Like I think it's kind of like The Exorcist, and where depending on what your religious background is and what you bring to it will kind of depend on how much you get out of it. as for me, who's been non-religious their entire life, not a lot do I get out of the Catholicism in this show, because I just don't have that experience. But it's still interesting, and it's still going to interesting places. And once things really started to like take off, then I was fully invested into it, and I really dug it. It's and I think it's only like some like 9 episodes. It's not that long of a watch. You can watch it over the course of a week, and it's really good. Some great performances and a interesting new genre take.
Nice. I think it's worth mentioning for those that have not seen it. I came to it very late, and I was really taken by how good it was. Dr. Sleep is on Netflix, and it's totally worth a watch.
Yeah, Dr. Sleep is really interesting. I have a hard time describing that movie. It's like a low-key X-Men movie as a horror film.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Yeah, and it works really well. In that vein, it's a neat movie. I just still have problems with it being this like canon sequel to The Shining.
Yeah,
that like I get follow up the character, but there's sort of like this kind of at a certain point, it feels like it's dissolving into nostalgia in its connection to The Shining, and those are the parts I thought worth the least. When it was being its own thing, I was really digging it.
I agree 110%. For sure. For sure. And brand new cherry flavor?
Yeah, I think I probably talked about this one a few episodes ago because I had started it. And then I just kind of fell off and was watching other things, and I always meant to return to it. And since we were doing our horror stuff, I'm like, okay, I'm going to finally go back and finish Brand New Cherry Flavor. And especially because I'd heard the filmmakers, Nick and Tosca and Lenore Zion, and I'd heard them on another podcast. And they were, you know, talking about the show. It's like, it got me reinterested in it. It's like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to finish that show. And I didn't fall off for any reasons other than just time. And so I went back and dove back in, and apparently I'd sort of like fallen off at exactly the wrong time, because right after I picked up, it's when the building was done and it started to go right for the fucking jugular, and it got really mean and things started to go over the top, and it is a blast. I enjoyed the hell out of this show so much. The premise for people who don't know is Rosa Salazar is a young upcoming filmmaker in the early 1990s who travels to LA to get into the industry with her little short film under her belt, and immediately gets taken under the wing of this scumbag producer who then steals her movie from her and screws her out of it and hires another director to make the feature film based on her short. And upset and feeling jilted, she goes to a witch played by Catherine Keener in the Hollywood Hills, who puts a curse on this producer. And things start to really spiral out of control for both the producer and Rosa Salazar as they become kind of inextricably linked to this downward spiral of horribleness. And it is unlike anything I've seen before. It is a very bizarre story, but it was so much fun. And it becomes a regular thing that Rosa Salazar starts coughing up kittens.
Kittens.
Kittens. This is part of like the other, like in placing this curse, the other side of it is that like shit starts happening to her. And so, as a result, every once in a while, she'll just start choking and gagging, and then she'll cough up this little, like, baby kitten.
And so literally the cat lady.
And then the witch will come by and collect the kittens, because Rosa Salazar can't really pay her in money, so this is the payment she's going to, like, have to keep producing kittens. Oh my god, kittens.
That's hilarious.
What are the kittens for? We never know. We never find out. Just that this witch, she wants kittens. She needs them for something.
Sacrifice.
So that's the type of show it is, where it has a certain level of weirdness but not so much that you're like into full on like Mulholland Drive territory.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of fun. And when you watch this show, I don't know how anyone would ever look at Rosa Salazar and not say you are going to become a giant thing. It's like there's just something about this girl. And it's wild that the first two things I saw her in were Alita Battle Angel, where she is essentially motion captured and animated into a big eyed anime girl. And then the Amazon series Undone, where again, she is captured and then rotoscoped into animation. And so this is maybe the first thing I've seen where it's like, oh, okay, it's just Rosa Salazar.
Yeah.
I get to see her on screen doing her thing. And she is so good in this show. And she commands so much presence and seems to do it so effortlessly. And it's like, I am looking forward to her becoming this massive star because I don't know how it can't. She won't be. You know, it's...
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, I'll have to add that one to my watch list for sure. That sounds fun. I'll mention one more that's not technically a horror movie or a horror series, but it does have murders. It does involve murders.
It may be the thing that I was... This might be the thing that I was like, should I put this on my list? Maybe not for a horror thing. I don't know. And it went on and came off and went on and came off. And ultimately I left it off.
Only Murders in the Building?
Okay. No, that was not it.
Okay.
I was thinking Squid Game.
Oh dude, I finally started watching that last night. We watched two episodes of Squid Game. That show is so crazy.
I sat down to watch Squid Game and said, okay, I'm going to give it an episode, see if it grabs me. Next thing I know, it was 4 a.m. and I was still watching.
Yeah. No, we watched the same thing. We're like, okay, we have, you know, it's 10 o'clock. We can probably watch an episode before we get so sleepy that we'll fall asleep. We watched two episodes and maybe you could have watched one more, but I'm like, okay, we got to go to bed now because otherwise we're going to be up until 6. And then we're screwed. Our whole Saturday is gone. So we were adults and only watched two episodes. But man, so far I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I dug the hell out of Squid Game. I got all the way through to the end. I have maybe a little bit of problems with the last 30 minutes of the show, but other than that, I thought the show was incredible.
It's really good. The thing that kept like going through my mind as I watched the first two episodes, it was like, it's finally time people realize how amazing Korean movies are and Korean series are, because they're certainly working on the level of Hollywood for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
No, but I wanted to mention Only Murders in the Building because this show shouldn't be as good as it is. And it is actually quite good. So this is on Disney Plus. It's actually a Starz series. So it falls within the Disney Plus umbrella. It stars Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez, and they all live in this New York apartment building where somebody gets murdered and they're trying to find out who it is. And of course, they all have baggage, but they somehow end up doing a podcast together to try to uncover who the murderer is, and it just makes things worse. It's really funny. It has some very dark moments. It's just way better than it has any right to be completely honest. This show just works. It just works. And like I say, it's not really a horror thing, but there is murder involved. So I'm squeezing it in just because of that.
I haven't even heard of this show.
It is, like I say, way better than it has any right to be. They've released 9 episodes. There's one episode left. And yeah, it's like when it starts, I'm kind of like, because I mean, I haven't seen Selena Gomez in anything like adult. So it's weird. The first like two episodes, you're like, this is a bit odd. It almost feels like countercasting to kind of, you know, this is her shift into the adult film world. But it totally works. It's very, very funny. Very, very funny. And it's worth watching. It's worth watching. It's very charming as well.
I will check that out.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. And that's all I have. I have nothing else.
It seems like such a wild combination. Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez.
I know. And you think, how could this possibly work? And it does. I still don't really understand how it works, but Martin Short is just so unlikable. He's this like douchey producer, Broadway producer that hasn't had a hit in like 15 years, but he still thinks he's popular. So he's constantly like, he can't even afford to live in the building, but he's constantly making himself up to be bigger than he is. So he always has some scheme to make money. And Steve Martin plays this retired actor who used to be like on a popular TV cop show. It just, like I say, it just, you read it, you think, this, how could this possibly work? And then you watch the show and you're like, okay, so this is actually quite charming. It works.
That's interesting. I'm definitely going to have to check this out.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are talking about it. I'm like, I don't know why, because this show is actually kind of fun. And that's all I have. But that was a pretty good run of good stuff for Halloween. Lots to watch.
Yeah, and like lots more that I didn't get to too. So it's like, I could probably do like 3 more of these episodes. But, but I mean, hopefully there's some deep cuts in there for people to watch.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's certainly some for me that I'm looking forward to getting on top of. For sure, The Night House is next for me.
Yes, absolutely.
That's definitely happening in the next couple of weeks.
And I'm definitely going to check out Mosquito State because that sounds cool.
Yeah, Mosquito State's crazy. I still, that movie, just thinking about it makes me kind of icky. Like, I'm already not good with bugs.
Mm-hmm.
That did not help. Not help at all. At all. But, yeah. So be warned, people. Be warned. Well, and you had the same thing because Queen of Black Magic, you were saying, if you've got insects, stay away.
It's got ample insects in there. So if creepy crawlies are too much for you, then that film might be a hard one.
Yeah. So we will have a full list for you at atcpod.ca. Follow Ashley. Ashley, where can folks find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at you can find me on Twitter at Ashley Lynch. And also I've started Twitch streaming recently where I talk about movie news and play video games, lately playing a whole bunch of Dead by Daylight. So you can follow me there on Twitch at Media Offline TV.
Oh, this is a new enterprise. I like it. I like it a lot.
Always building.
Always. And you can find me at the marina when I'm around, which isn't often. But I will try to be a little more active once things settle down a little bit. But Ashley gives you lots of great, not always horror, but lots of good horror stuff there. So for sure follow. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. So until then.
See you then.
Opening and closing credits are Happy Alley by composer Kevin MacLeod. For more information, visit incompetech.com.